I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work for whatever reason. It could be they're too niche, could be they're too clever. What other reasons could there be, Joel?
It could be that they are rubbish.
Well done, Joel. Joel's here.
Sorry.
He's back.
I'm currently in a Premier Inn in the Wirral.
Yeah, we're experimenting. We're on the phone together. And we're recording separately, and then we're going to sync it together, and you guys aren't even going to know. It's going to be that smooth. It's going to be slick.
It's magic.
How have you been? You missed last week as well, Joel. This could actually solve... If this works, we could never have a problem of you not being here again.
If this works, I might never have to see you again.
Oh, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
What a relief.
Oh, God.
I might move up to the Wirral.
Just so you don't have to see me.
Yeah.
I mean, you could stay in Stratford and we could still record like this.
We could.
Yeah.
Or we could just get a really... If I stay in Stratford, we could probably just get a really long lead.
Yeah. But Joel.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just too surreal, Joel. It's just surreal nonsense, mate. There's no such thing as that long a wire. You're talking rubbish.
Okay.
Joel, why are you up there? Get that out of the way. Tell us.
I'm recording a podcast.
I know. They're listening to it.
Oh, bloody no! This is a good one. For the BBC.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right.
What is that?
I do proper stuff as well.
Proper stuff. What do you mean proper stuff? Well, this is proper stuff.
The stuff I get paid for.
This is well. Okay, fair enough. Joel, you earn all right out of this. You have earned a pound out of this.
Anyone who's seen my gold tooth will agree.
I don't know what that means. What do you mean, your gold tooth?
Just that I've got loads of money and I've spent it on a gold tooth.
Is that what people do with money? I don't think they do, Joel.
There was a time, wasn't there?
Your teeth fall out and that you sort of given the options.
You're given the option.
You're feeling a little bit adventurous.
Yeah. What happens when you die? Who knows?
Well, that's quite a big old question. Oh, right. Sorry. I thought you meant...
No, to the tooth. Why would I just say that? That'd be so weird.
Anyway, Joel, come on. Stop rambling. We know where you are. Let's crack on. So this week, Joel.
Yeah.
Very special one. The man I've been wanting to get on for ages is Adam Bloom.
Bloom!
It's Adam Bloom.
Bloom!
Absolutely brilliant comic mind, as you will now see. Enjoy it. So, let's just get cracking, mate. So you know what it's all about, the podcast? So, do you want to start with one of mine, just to get us in the mood? Like, just one of mine that doesn't work?
Yes.
Would you want to go into... Have you got anything you've sort of planned?
My whole set.
Your whole set, yeah. Have you got anything recent that you've, like, tried and it hasn't landed?
I recently did a line that was very comedy literate, in the sense it was almost for comics only. And I've got to accept that that's why it didn't work.
Yeah.
But first time I did it, Scott Capurro and Lewis Schaefer in the back of the room... And they're both real comics,
yeah,
aren't they? So
yeah,
they appreciate it. And they howled. And then the audience, which was a small arty crowd in an art gallery, they laughed because I think that the comedians laughing made them go, okay, something special is happening here.
Yeah.
So they kind of a little bit of Ember's New Clothes, but also they were a very broad-minded audience. They were, you know, they'd gone to an art gallery in the first place and bought, you know, you'd have to remember that gallery to even notice the ticket sale. So they're, you know, arty people. But the line was, I've got this grandmother who's, you know, often says slightly racist things, but nothing compared to what I'm about to say. And, you know, that was the line.
Yeah,
and,
I
did a Top Secret to a young audience at New Material Night on the back of it working once. Because, you know, I think it's still new material if it's the second time
you've done
it.
You can't judge it as well, because you don't know why the audience laughed. Because you said you think they may have done it because they heard the comics laughing.
Well, all I know is when I did it the second time to 150 young people, it got silence that cost me 4 minutes of trying to win the audience back again. Because it sounded like I'm just going, I am more racist than an old racist.
And of course,
the joke is
obviously that it's comics...
Yeah, it's tongue-in-cheek. And also it's sending up the amount of comedians who will go, you know, I've got this homophobic friend, he says this. And you go, hang on a minute, you just made an excuse to do a homophobic joke. Or, you know, my grandmother's relationship, she says this. And you go, okay, now we're laughing at her, but we're still appreciating the wit behind the joke or the, you know, it allows, you know, and there are probably people listening to this go, no, you're missing the point. It allows us to laugh at how stupid racists are. But you know what? Sometimes they're quoting something quite witty that is so non-PC you would never dream of saying it because it's nasty and bigoted. So anyway, so that line, the idea was, it looks like I'm about to do a racist comment, but guys, to someone else's, and then I'm going to go, but I, nothing compared to me. I think it's a good joke. And the thing is, Scott Capurra said to me afterwards, audiences are going to laugh at that, but they're not going to know exactly why. They're just going to go, something happened.
But some people might laugh for the wrong reason.
As in, oh my God, and we're back where we started.
So
Scott's analysis was very... meticulous, and he was basically saying in a nutshell that the audience will feel that something happened.
That's interesting. I wrote a joke the other day that I think is a bit too industry in the sense, like comic for comics, but it's not really like the same sort of for comics. Just it's something like I just read a book about how to deal with heckles. I couldn't put it down.
Oh, do you know who does?
Oh, is there one that I read it already?
Oh, Tim Vines has read this book called The History of Glue, and I couldn't put it down.
Oh, okay.
And so it's actually a different play on put down, isn't it? But it's still a book with the word put down.
And also,
the
his is more. But all the audience will get his more.
Because the put down.
Because some people just don't know what a put down is.
But here's an interesting thing, isn't it? The play on words is put down, as in heckle put down, as opposed to putting a put down, as in glue stuck to it. But let's be honest. They're both book jokes about the phrase that you couldn't put something down.
Yeah.
That's what the crux of the joke is.
But also, my joke, what I don't like about it is it doesn't actually work on both sides of the joke because you wouldn't... I couldn't put the book down. I don't think it makes sense both sides. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, maybe if the book was heckling...
The book's not heckling.
I bought this talking book. I bought an audio book on heckles. Couldn't put it down. Or the best heckles ever. Maybe it has to be better than you. I bought an audiobook on the best heckles ever.
There you go.
I couldn't put it down.
But then if it was an audiobook, you wouldn't be putting it down.
You'd be trying to put it down.
Like you wouldn't have it in your hands, would you?
That's true. I couldn't stop playing it. We have a problem. I thought I'd solved it then. So you were talking just before we started recording about meeting someone who's got a more interesting job than you or a very well-known person you don't know is well-known. I was in the Pleasant Courtyard one in Edinburgh, and this very well-spoken, very polite guy came up to me and he said, oh, I saw a show, I liked it. Do you know my brother, Tim Vine? And I went, yeah. Tim Vine makes me laugh out loud more than anyone on the planet.
Yeah.
And maybe Neil Hamburger as well. But he said, do you know... I actually gave him a joke once. So this was Jeremy Vine.
Did you know who Jeremy Vine was?
No, this was years ago. He was still well known at the time, but I just didn't know who he was. And he was so low status because he didn't bother saying, yeah, I work in television too. It was so charming.
Yeah.
So charming. The best way to do it, really.
Which joke was it?
He said, I gave him a joke. It was, I read this book. It's called The History of Glue. I couldn't put it down. So what's funny is not only do I know...
That was you?
No, Jeremy Vine gave it to Tim Vine.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, what's the day? Tuesday. On Saturday, I told this story because someone brought up that joke. What a coincidence. But I'm glad that joke doesn't work for you because it's got a book, well, I couldn't put it down, about, you know, it's a different joke, isn't it? But
yeah,
it's still,
yeah.
You just can't, there's not room for two complete damn book jokes.
Yeah, so that's why it's in the jokes that don't work. It's one of those that I haven't even tried it, but I know it's not going to work. Like, I'm not happy enough with it.
But here's the thing. This is why what you do is so good, because there's a quality control with regard to the wordplay being perfect.
Yeah.
And that, as you say, it's not perfect. And I tried to correct it, and that wasn't perfect either. In fact, I made a mess of it. But
that's the process, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the process. But it's a nice idea that these are good heckles. The flaw is the book doesn't seem to you, isn't it? But the thing is, there are people, I've watched people do wordplay, and it's just, it's like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and there's a few acts that do that.
There's some big name ones who do it. I don't want to out anyone, but there's a big, big name who does one, and it annoys the hell out of me because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But the thing is, I never used to understand that whole thing, but like in the last sort of 5 years maybe, I've sort of learned that the understanding of both sides of the... That's how I say it. I don't always know the best way to describe it, but it's both sides of the joke making sense.
Yeah. Well, the thing is with me, I've often been accused of overthinking stuff, and what gets me is it's never really successful comedians who say it to me.
Right.
So it's like I'll be on a card journey with someone and they go, I'll talk about an idea and then I go, I'm thinking of making it like that because of that. And they go, I think you overthink things. And I think, oh, right, because I just stormed the gig and you didn't.
Yeah.
So... Do you know what I mean?
You cannot overthink it.
Well, there we go. So when Eddie Izzard said it to me, I'm going to take note. But if someone who isn't doing the best stuff...
That's the difference maker.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what takes it to the next level of a joke that gets to a big laugh.
Yeah, it is.
But the trouble is, it's hard to get those. You have to work really hard to get...
You do. Sometimes you get it first time, don't you? And then other times...
Yeah.
I once took 7 attempts once.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds quite normal to me. Like, that's... Can you remember what it was?
Yes.
And the different attempts?
No, I can't. What it was I did a bit about... It was about a murder-suicide.
Okay.
It was a murder-suicide joke that was so dark, the audience had an intake of breath on the punchline.
And that is... But when it wasn't working, or even once it does work?
At best, it would get a half laugh, and at worst, it would just get a complete intake of breath by the audience.
Yeah.
So what I was trying to do was do a joke afterwards to... quickly get them back.
Yeah.
But you know, after 7 attempts, you know, I worked out what the best thing to do was?
What?
Do a really, really long ranting line that keeps them holding their breath in, because you're not allowing them to breathe because they've just taken a sharp intake of breath, and then you keep going.
Yeah.
And they can't breathe because you're grabbing them, especially the speed I go at, the intensity I'm talking at with, and then they suddenly get to the punchline, which is a good line, and it is a playful joke, and it's
interesting.
And then they release all of that, and it was immense. But it took me, it just showed I've been going probably 23 years at the time, and I was even 24 years, and I was going, how can I get around this problem? And I was doing short this, that, different methods. And on the 7th go, I went, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to attach that joke to it, which was about, because what I'd say is, now at this point, you probably work out I'm a bit mixed up, but I had a weird childhood. And then I rant about something in my childhood, which is about my mum waking my sister and I up in the middle of the night and running away from home. So when my dad was asleep.
Okay.
So that's pretty... serious stuff, right?
It's
a subject matter. So they've already gone about a murder-suicide joke, and then you're telling them this information with no punchline at all. They go, oh my God, I breathed in, and now you're not letting me breathe out. And now you're telling me this really personal stuff, the kind of stuff that would make you a bit mixed up in life. And then suddenly there's a really silly payoff, and it all comes out, and it's huge.
Yeah.
And it's huge. So basically I'm putting...
So do you think also it's the tension you're building?
Nothing but. Obviously, there has to be a funny bit at the end. But if I did the line on its own, and I tear the line on its own. But by the way, I've got to stress this: the line I've attached to it works anyway.
Right.
But what I've done is I've attached a really long setup with intense, quite disturbing information
to get from A to B.
And what I've done is it's just a lovely thing to know that the actual way I found of dealing with complete silence to a joke on a long setup was to do another one. Oh, there we go.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. I would say a long setup. And also, it was a long punchline with nothing, actually. And then you go, wow, that was a lot of work for nothing. Surely the way around is to do something quick.
Yeah.
Turned out I did the longest setup I've got.
Yeah.
Bang on the end of it. It was like the Shawshank Redemption, just this long tunnel of shit.
So did you just think, you thought, give that a try?
Yeah, because nothing short was working. So maybe the answer is, you know, I don't like the phrase thinking outside the box, but it was definitely thinking outside the box at that day, because I went, well, what can I do that's completely opposite what I think is right? Counterintuitive.
So what was the line?
Which one? The whole thing? Or
well, oh, whatever you want to say, or none. Doesn't matter.
Because there's no atmosphere with me saying it, you know, people listening at home on their own, it's not the same. But yeah. the funny, the sweet line was I'd say, so I'd get this on the suicide bit.
Mm.
And I'd go, now at this point, you probably realise I'm quite mixed up. But I had a weird childhood. I said, my mum woke me and my sister up in the middle of the night when I was 4 years old. Said, we're running away from home. Your father's asleep in the next room and knows nothing about this. Take your favourite one thing you like playing with and we're going. But I was clever. I took my dad. Which is so silly, right? So, I mean, as if you could take your dad with you.
Oh, right? It's great, man.
Oh, cheers. But the thing is, that always did work.
Yeah.
But doing that on the back of the thing made it colossal. I mean,
so you just added loads of
information on the back
it.
Of loads of information that doesn't work.
Yeah.
I took two long bits together with a silence in the middle.
You know what? I think... So basically, any joke that I think has got a weak punchline or just not... a strong punchline, I want that joke to be as short as possible.
Yeah.
Because a long setup, it won't work.
No.
But that's the opposite. If you know you have a really solid punch, you can have that longer build to build the tension and then the release.
Yeah. I can't tell you how good it felt getting that done.
Yeah.
Because I knew, the thing is, as well, I didn't want to drop the suicide joke because I've comics in car journeys really laughed at the suicide joke.
Yeah.
And the audiences sometimes, I mean, on a good night, it'll get a big laugh, but they've got to really, really, really like you to allow you to talk about killing people and then yourself.
How far in the set would you do that joke?
Opening line. maybe 15 minutes into it, 20
okay.
or.
Okay, I won't even say the joke. I'll just tell you what the joke roughly is egg and spoon race, and then they shout, you're off. They're off. And obviously the eggs are off. But the trouble with that is, and they're off is a commentary thing. It's not the person that starts them that just goes go. He wouldn't say and they're off.
Could you not say that there was I suppose it's a bit contrived saying there was an overzealous dad at the school sports who liked to commentate. But yeah,
it's that sort of thing. It would have to be.
What if the premise was I think they should have egg and spoon race at the Olympics, and then the commentary would go and they're off. But even that, you think it is more, doesn't it?
Fresh eggs. Do you mean that?
Yeah, there we go.
There's something about.
But you have to contrive a situation to make the joke, don't you?
Yeah.
Imagine if the Olympics had this, there was a commentator.
See, for that, I say this a lot on the podcast. I like my stuff, the setups, to be realistic. I don't mind if the twist is mad, but I like to bring them in.
And I can have mine's based in the real world, which yours isn't. Yeah. But I don't mind if the punchline isn't based, because that's
I
pulled the rug, but I could never carry on.
Yeah.
My head can fall off on the punchline, but I'm not going to then pick it back up again and walk off.
Yeah.
But yeah, similar thing.
So you're right. So if the only way I can do them and be happy with it is creating, like you just said, an environment. Imagine if, and then it's just an idea, isn't it?
Yeah. How about, I don't dabble in wordplay, so I'm not as good at fixing these things, but what if there's a... I think egg and spoon race, you often drop the eggs, so surely they should use eggs that are past their sell-by date.
Yeah.
And they're off. That's not quite there, is it?
That's not okay, quite there. But that's a good idea, actually.
Because it justifies doing it.
Because you're sticking the other way around. You're sticking you've already said they're out past their sell-by date.
Yeah. But also, it also justifies it.
And you say it makes sense, wouldn't it? Because the commentator would shout, and they're off.
Yeah.
And... The
punchline's still not there, but what's nice is it justifies doing it.
Yeah.
What?
Do you like the idea of and they're off being the punch?
Yeah, it's just we need something in the middle, don't we?
Yeah.
Still not quite right. Basically, I've just realised, I'm going, God, I'm normally good at this, but I'm going, you're chucking stuff that doesn't work.
No wonder.
I'm going, that's two in a row I can't fix. That's because the man who wrote them can't fix them. And you're one of the best at work, but you know, you're up there in the top couple, you know.
Oh, thanks, man. That's
you are.
So, but just by talking this through, I now think that I actually think there will be a way of doing that.
Oh,
I think
wonderful.
With a bit of work, it's because the joke is there. You just need to. That's it. It's just putting it. Where do you put it in the world to make that?
What about old people doing egg and spoon race? They're so slow. By the time they get to the finish line, the eggs part at sub eight, and they're off. Lee Mack and I were doing new material once in the Meccano Club in Islington, lovely venue, years ago, yonks ago. And we did a gig to 20 people and, you know, you're dying on stage with new stuff. You chuck in a banker.
yeah,
to win them back, and that dies. And yeah, you're like, yeah, okay, well, this is a real not event.
Yeah.
And then after we went for a meal, and Lee said, do you know, when it's this quiet, I really think we're better off cancelling the gig and just sitting around a table taking turns saying, I've got this idea.
Yeah.
And look, we just did that now.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, 100%.
Because that in, if you, would you say it was a new material night? It was a new,
yes, it was a new material stuff. Night. Yeah.
Yeah, because if your gold doesn't work, you can't judge the new stuff
absolutely,
on it.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was a horrible moment. I thought, I'm winning back with this. I went, oh my God, what hope have I got? What hope have I got?
I think... So I've got a couple of mates that I soundboard ideas with. So I'll just write loads of ideas and I'll just go, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? Because I like to do that before trying it in front of a live audience, because it just gives you a little bit of confidence if they go, that's good. Right. Or, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And since doing this podcast, just chatting ideas through. Do you have people you chat ideas through with?
Not anyone specific, but obviously car journeys, I'll bounce ideas around when the topic comes up. Not really. Whoever's just in the room. I mean, when I was, you know, in a long-term relationship with my wife, I would discuss them. She was incredible.
My girlfriend's get quite good.
Oh, my God. I mean, she worked in advertising and production, but was very creative, regardless of the fact that her job wasn't a creative job.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a Radio 4 series on it. She picked up a script and just put her glasses on and just got a pen and went duh, duh, duh. And within 2 minutes had three beautiful toppers.
Really?
What, I mean, maybe 3 minutes. Two, three.
Yeah.
The point is, it was very brief.
But do you think that's rubbed off from you?
I don't know. But all I know is she got the first round of applause of a recording. I'll tell you the line.
Really?
We're talking about, I said, people, it's a whole episode on reading. And I said, what I can't stand is when people... the people who read a lot and they confuse knowledge with intelligence.
Yeah.
I say, I've read over 2,000 books. And what did you think? There's quite a lot. And I know that reading a book can provoke a thought, but so can looking out, but so can staring through a window.
Mm.
But you don't get people bragging about how many windows they stared through. And she went, apart from maybe Philella Benjamin when she had a few drinks. And are you old enough to know who Philella Benjamin is?
Yeah.
Right, play school, right?
Mm.
So it was very age specific. So
when was this?
This was 2005.
Yes, yeah, so that's
referring to the 70s. But the audience were the right age group. It got a roar and a round of applause. Apart from maybe Philella Benjamin when she's had a couple of drinks, is a very difficult punchline to say at my speed with a slight speech impediment.
Yeah.
Apart from maybe Philella. I should practice Philella. Anyway, killed. So I took it to the clubs, which is what I rarely did with my Radio 4 stuff. And it was hit and miss because it was not only cerebral, you had to be old enough to watch Play School.
Yeah, and young enough to watch Play School as well.
You had to be between, at the time, 30 and 50, maybe 30 and 45 at the time.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making was that she was amazing at just adding a topper. And there was, I mean, this was three, not quite to that standard, but still three that I used and worked. Wonderful having someone in your life.
What's your thought on toppers? Because... I don't like toppers.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah, and I know I'm unusual because
but you're doing dibbida bum, dibbida bum. You'd almost knock your rhythm off if you did a topper.
That might be what it is.
There you go. That setup's really quite rushed.
Yeah.
Dibbida bum, dibbida bum, dibbida bum bum. Where's the dibbida at the end?
Yeah.
Where's the bum at the end? It's almost like where's the you've missed out a setup, mate.
Yeah, because what I find, and that you might have just stumbled on the reason actually that it doesn't work, but I don't like a topper unless it's equal or better laugh than the joke.
There's nothing. I call them bottomers.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no point having a diminishing return.
No. So that's why I don't like them, because if it falls off, I'm like, well, I want people to remember the big laugh 100%, on that bit.
100%. Woody Allen's moose routine. Have you heard them?
I love the moose routine.
Well, the last laugh is the biggest laugh in the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's social commentary about anti-Semitism in the golf industry.
What's the laugh?
The following morning, Mr. Berkowitz wakes up in a moose suit. No, hold on. Following morning, Mr. Berkowitz, he's shot and stuffed at the New York Athletic Club, and the joke is on them because it's restricted.
And
the one he did on TV, because it was a less known word restricted, and the joke is on them because they don't allow Jews there. But it was
he said that on the TV.
He said don't allow Jews there to an audience who wouldn't know what restricted membership. But the point is that's social commentary in a very no go on.
I was gonna say, do you think changing that word in changed the reaction to what it would normally have got? Because it's more on the nose, which usually I'd say that's less. But then if more people get it, then you get more.
Restrict is a better word.
Yeah. You have to think a bit.
Yes. But also restricted sounds better than they don't allow Jews there. It's fewer syllables. Yeah. It ends on id rather than there. But the bottom line is if you've got 40% of the audience not getting it, it's a big lie.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but the then, point...
Sorry. Yeah. This is just interesting to me. So do you think in the room... So was he thinking the people watching at home would he'd need to spit out to, or the people in the room?
People at home.
Yeah.
Well, maybe both, but the bottom line is people in the room don't matter as much as
do you reckon that annoyed him that he had to do a lesser joke? I'd love to know that. That's interesting.
We would all prefer the whole audience to all know a phrase.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is I don't think it matters that much. I mean, the rhythm of the joke would bother him more than anything.
Yeah.
But the audience, I can't know what the audience were. TV audience is going to be a cross-section of the public. But
so that's annoyed me now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the point I'm really making is it got the biggest laugh of the set, and it's social commentary in a surreal Gary Larson.
Yeah, yeah.
Pre-Gary Larson, pre-Izzard.
Yeah.
Routine about animals having personalities. Yeah,
it's great. And when I first discovered that, it wasn't actually that long ago.
Mind-blowing. Best routine of all time.
Do you think so,
Everything continues where the last bit left off.
It's on YouTube if people want to check it out.
Yeah, the moose. Everything continues where the last joke left.
Yeah.
And my mum made a very good point. We never know what happened to the moose. He was he's left at a party.
Oh, yeah.
Everything continued from the Berkowitz's perspective.
Yeah.
But the moose is left at the party. That's almost like a sequel to be written.
It is, yeah.
What happened to the moose? I mean, I was at a gig recently. It was such a lovely audience. It's very kind of working class ethics crowd, who are arguably the best audiences to perform to, like up the creek, just complete, like, working class people know how to have fun more because, I suppose, because they've got jobs where they've got to have a laugh to get on with it more likely. Mm. You know, if you're the CEO of a company, you probably don't laugh all day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You laugh when you get home and you're getting your yacht. Do you know what I mean? But if you're a postman, you've got to have a laugh at work when you're going through the, you know, the sorting office or whatever. So the thing is... this was a really salt of the earth, working class Essex audience. And there was a comedian on stage, Julian Dean, who I'm sure you're a big fan of.
Yeah.
He's outstanding, right?
Yeah.
Every joke's just genius, pretty much. And he goes, this bloke was shouting out, oh, superb, like that. And that's so good. And it was lovely because he was doing it on the laugh. So it wasn't like he was delaying his timing.
He wasn't distracting the other people from laughing.
But rather than laughing, he was shouting out how beautifully structured the jokes were. And he was definitely more about the structure than the situation.
So out of interest with Julian's stuff, would you say he's more pullback and reveal or reveal
expectation?
Massively
pullback and reveal.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, all no right. No doubt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No doubt. But he's...
I'm going to have a real good think about this because I've always sort of lumped those two styles
they're
of jokes together. No.
Pullback and reveal, specifically when you're painting a picture that's later revealed to be a different picture when you see more information.
Yeah.
And it got a bad reputation because all the really hack comedians going, you know, and then I got off the bus whatever.
Go on, tell me what you're going to say.
I did a tweet once. I said, this is a different point. I said, if your set ends in a story about something a kid said on a night bus, probably explains why you're still getting night buses home from gigs.
Okay.
But that's different because that's not that I got the bus.
No.
But there's a certain quality control when it comes to being successful. And that's why you very rarely hear comedians say, and then I got out my limo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, because you wouldn't have.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but what are you going to say about the buses?
I tweeted one about... I'm terrible at pullback and reveal jokes. No, I was telling my mate that I'm terrible at pullback and reveal jokes and then I got off the bus.
But or something like that. Pullback and reveal
jokes. No, it's just a tweet, just for the comments.
Oh, right. Gotcha.
Yeah, it would never work.
How about then I got on the bus?
And then I got on the again, better for comics, but yeah, audience still wouldn't get it.
No, but if it's for comics in the first place,
yeah,
you
yeah,
well
yeah,
comic
that's
it
a
up.
Better joke. Yeah, yeah,
I love
that's
comic
great.
Jokes. I got a few... Next time I see a comedian do a shark attack joke, I'm going to punch him on the nose, which was more pertinent 15 years ago.
Okay, so was that a commonly...
Oh, my God. Before your time, right? When the Discovery Channel came out, comics are sitting at home watching the TV, and it's like, if you get attacked by a shark, punch him on the nose. You go, oh, I think I got a joke here. Well, of course you got a joke here. It's already a ludicrous thing, punching a shark on the nose. Let's see what we got.
Yeah.
Like, who couldn't think of any joke about punching a shark? That's why I'd avoid it, because it's so clearly an obvious situation to write a joke about.
Yeah.
The joke's almost written for you. Comic jokes. My favourite comic joke ever is Dennis Miller. says, you ever see a Dennis comic Miller. Impression? You don't know Dennis Miller, American comic. Oh, he was big in the 90s. Because you ever see a comic impressionist go, hey, can you imagine Robert De Niro working in Burger King? I think, no, but I can imagine you working in Burger King. Is that wonderful?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I wish I could remember more of those sort of, because I have got rid of loads of, but not even got rid of them. It's one of those where you write, you think, the comics would get it, but no one else would. It's like a comics observation.
Yeah, you don't want only people at the back of the room laughing. It's nice when the audience kind of get it too, if they've watched enough comedy. I first did the shark attack joke at the Stand in Edinburgh, off season, as in non-festival time, and it got a really big laugh. Like the sound technicians howling, but the audience laughed.
Yeah. But then I suppose if an audience goes to comedy a lot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You've got to pick where to do it. 1998, I came out with a joke about a turban and it had a topper to it that was. It was
Sorry, on top.
One, stop it! It had a topper that was 100% going to get a big laugh than the building laugh.
Right.
And it's never, ever died. It's the only joke that's never, ever died. So I'll be a corporate, it's really, really tough. I do that joke and I get polite chuckles on the building punchline or even nothing because I'm having such a tough gig. And there will always be a laugh on the surprise because the twist's so strong. And it's never, ever failed. So that joke, if I'm doing a late show, you know, let's say it's quick as well. So let's say I've done a story at the end of a gig and it hasn't got the big punchline to get off on.
Yeah.
You don't want to go, good night.
Yeah.
So I just go, oh, it's one more thing, bang. And it's like a 30-40 second bit that will never, ever fail. I can't get rid of that.
No.
And it's, you know, and some people go, God, is he still doing that joke? Yeah, but 10 minutes of my set's less than a year old.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, don't judge me because that one joke. Yeah. I hate the idea of someone walking in the room and go, oh, he's still doing that joke. His set hasn't changed. Go, no, 5 minutes is less than 2 months old.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's my go-to joke to save me.
I mean, mine, I've got stuff, it's all different ages of
jokes. What's your oldest joke you've got?
Oldest joke that I still do?
Mm.
I think Badger Man probably is my oldest.
Have you given it away? Have you time drifted it?
No, I haven't given it away. I read the other day that during the war the English referred to Adolf Hitler as Badger Man, although it might say Bad German. So that was,
I have heard that one.
Yeah, so that was, that took me a long time to get going. So I think the actual idea was probably maybe one of my oldest. And it was just in a notepad. And then I eventually went back to it and went, oh, just turn that round the other way. Because I got better at writing.
What's funny is Badger Man, there's arguably that's a contrived joke because he doesn't look like a badger. He doesn't sound like a badger. There's nothing badgery about
him. Yeah, it just makes people go, oh, that's weird.
Yeah, but what I mean is, It arguably isn't clever enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet it's very funny and it works.
Yeah, well, it won't ever get a huge. It's just a nice laugh.
Yeah, okay.
It won't smash.
Gotcha.
It's one of those where they go, that's clever, rather than, do you know what I mean?
Could you see that moustache is a stripe down the middle and he's got pink face there and there? And I think that's why they referred to him as Badger Man. Actually, could have been Bad German, but it's not enough, is it? Because it's not a big stripe. If moustaches. If it's a shame the gap, what's that gap there called? What's it called?
I don't know.
I'm scared to use the word between your bum and your.
I was just about to use that word.
But if he had a really, if only Hitler had a really long one of those, then you could do a stripe. It could be Badger Man.
Yeah.
Julian Dean's got my favourite Hitler joke ever, which is if I had the time machine, I'd go back to just before Hitler got in power and put a bet on it. As I said, it's the ultimate example of greed over humanity, isn't it? Isn't that beautiful?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I come from a close-up magic background.
Okay.
So I'm really into the idea of you think it's there and it's not there.
Yeah.
And I'm doing loads of those.
Yeah.
I get a massive kick out of it. I get massive kick where the audience think they know what the setup's going to be and then it is the punchline because it slaps around the face when they're not waiting to be slapped.
Yeah.
It comes on the offbeat. Mm. I got line, I flew business class the other day to whatever country I'm doing a joke about. It's interchangeable, right?
And
I said it was amazing. I don't know if you already know this, but if you want to fly business class, all you got to do is put on a really nice suit. Mm-hmm. And get a job. And the thing is, you know, if you time it right and the audience are thinking, we all know, you put a suit on, you'll be upgraded.
Yeah.
And if I say it with enthusiasm, which I say most things, they're like, no, bless him, he's only just found out that joke. We've known it for years.
Yeah.
And it works best to a middle-class audience who've got kind of better kind of paid jobs because they look down on me at that moment thinking, we know that. And they go, get a job. And you're like, whoa!
Yeah.
He just told me to get a fucking job.
Yeah.
And I love the status change because you're playing it like, I've just learned this way of flying business class.
Yeah.
And it turns out I'm flying business class because I paid for it.
Yeah.
And that slap around their face is like, don't you condescend me. Yeah. I'm condescending you. And it's a massive status change. It's so much in there. In the space of 1 second, all that happens. And someone can listen and go, no, it's not. It's just a twist. If I do that to the right audience, I mean, let's think about it. If I do it to a gig to the homeless, that's not a very nice thing to say.
Yeah.
If I do it to students, then I'm laughing at the fact that they haven't got enough money, but they are on the way to having a job. That's acceptable. But for me, the best place to do it is people who actually look like they've got nice jobs. Because it's slapping them in the face and going, my life's better than yours.
Adam Bloom!
Bloom!
Adam Bloom! Great episode. And I'll let you into a little secret. We've got lots more footage from that because we recorded for ages. So you're going to get to hear more from Adam Bloom very soon.
I can't wait.
Ah, me neither. So that's good. That's exciting. I doubt we'll put it out next week. I guess we'll wait. Shall we just sort of keep it varied and then put it out in a little while, Joel?
And then, yeah, definitely.
I think that's a good idea,
and then we'll
isn't
surprise
it?
Surprise everyone. Yeah.
So any feedback from this episode at Jokes with Mark on across all social media. If you could leave us a lovely 5-star review, that would be bloody lovely on Apple Music, iTunes, because that really helps. Did you know, Joel, if you get nice reviews, then you can go up the comedy chart?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I did.
Anything else? Oh, we've got, I'm doing the Leicester Comedy Festival, Joel. 9th.
Ooh.
Yeah. My solo show, tickets are selling lovely. And that's on the 9th.
You buy them by baxing you a fiver, is that right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. You buy those on the Leicester Comedy Festival site, find them there. So snap them up quick. I'm doing the live podcast a week later. They haven't sold as much yet, but I haven't announced who the guest is. And I can't announce it right now, but it's good. I'm quite really excited about it. Cool. As long as it comes off, but I need confirmation before I can announce it, Joel. So maybe next week we'll tell everybody.
Exciting.
Yeah. Anything else, Joel?
Not from me, mate.
No? All right, then. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We do appreciate it, don't we, Joel?
Oh, I love it.
So happy. And I think we should give everybody a big hashtag awooga.
Awooga!
Hashtag awooga.
Hi,
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.